On this episode of Movies Ruin My Life, we talk about Edgar Wright's new film, Baby Driver. Okay, so that's Paula.
Hi.
And I'm Brandon. Always with the, like, super lackluster hellos, always. Okay. And just a quick talk on Baby Driver, which we just saw.
Mm-hmm.
Is it all right just to start off? It's going to be a synopsized episode, so can we just jump right into it? Obviously, spoiler warning goes up right off the jump. If you're planning on seeing this flick, which you should, I think we both recommend, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Then go see it, then come back and join us. Cool?
I liked it. I thought it was pretty cool. It was really intense. Like, there were parts that were really intense and almost emotionally draining, but then there were the happy parts that were very colorful and bright and almost dreamy.
Yeah, very dreamy.
Yeah, that sort of balanced it out, because the content is indeed really, really dark, mm-hmm. right?
The first thing that I noticed, and I tried not to lean over and say anything to you. I was going to, and then I decided not to. Save it for the podcast. We do a podcast. Did you know we do a podcast?
No. Is that what this thing is?
I love the intimacy in the driving sequences. Just that camera right in everyone's face, in the car, commingling with the... the editing is just... You never lost...
I was going to say the editing was really good.
Where the driving sequence was also, which...
There's no talking during, and when you mention that they cut to everyone's faces, it's very realistic, because they're looking around, they look freaked
scared,
out. Yeah, they're scared. They don't know what the hell's happening. They're hanging on for dear life, kind of thing. Even Baby doesn't know exactly what's coming next, and that was kind of cool, because it's not super smooth. He's not like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. You know, he's just like, oh shit, kind of thing. He does mess up a few times, and then he fixes the problem. He stays calm and collected. But he screws up a few times, and everyone's looking around like, how do we get out of this? So it's more realistic in that sense. I can't imagine everyone talking much during that situation. You see in some movies where there's a lot of back and forth banter to kind of lighten the mood. In this, there's nothing. It's just action. No talking.
Yeah, they weren't relying on jokes. They weren't relying on anything other than the stunt work and the editing. In the driving sequences.
Yeah.
In terms of the storytelling moments of the film, I was genuinely surprised at a lot of moments. I was genuinely pleased at other times. And the only moment that I really can say that I disliked a choice was the restaurant scene.
Where
Baby takes Deborah to the fancy restaurant.
Oh,
And I actually love how the scene works, because to go back to this kind of, you know, get everyone in the theater and get them out kind of thing. I love the idea of being able to tell a story with a scene like that. Very simple, very little dialogue, not much going on in the restaurant other than the two characters of Deborah and Baby interacting, right? But I just didn't like the camera work.
Oh, the
revolving
spinning
around the table.
It's like, okay, you can stop going around them now.
It worked the first few times, but it was a bold choice to do it over and over again. And that's just a personal thing.
Yeah.
Edgar Wright is kind of known for really active camera movement and repetitive camera movement. Like when you look back through films like Scott Pilgrim or, you know, Hot Fuzz. There's a lot of repetitive camera movement in Hot Fuzz. I guess because at that point he would have had more money than he did for Shaun of the Dead. Obviously, I think there's a lot less repetitive camera movement for This Is the End, because it's even more action-y than Hot Fuzz. It's like a lot of fighting, specific fighting in the back end of that film. And it's, you know, it's a different kind of story. I don't know. But he does kind of do that sort of movement. I can tell it's an artistic choice. It was a little disorienting for me, but I'm sure that there's someone else on some other podcast, or even you're going to say, I loved it, you know, or somebody out there is going to say like that.
I like
the scene though. the scene that was going on. The camera movement took me out of it, but the scene itself, just sit in the restaurant, or pick her up, no words. Go to the restaurant. You know they're in a fucking restaurant. You know they're eating cheesecake. You know, they're
the
having
the smallest cheesecake.
Yeah, an intimate moment. They're feeding each other, this sort of thing. You know, and then the first words is someone's paid the tab. That's my old boss. And I know I'm jumping ahead, but I think it's a perfect scene to illustrate what this whole film is.
Mm-hmm.
Other than the camera movement, which I think is bullshit for me. Mm-hmm. And I want to make that clear. It's just me. It's not anyone else. But the scene itself is brilliant. It embodies everything that this film is about in that you can tell a story really simply, and you can still, like, the purity of cinema is still intact. You don't have to jam, like, a character who's an exposition machine into a film, or you don't have to give every character a fucking last name or all of this stuff. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, you can tell a great story with very little.
Yeah.
And he's done a fantastic, fantastic job doing that.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that the camera work and how it took you out of it, because that's actually exactly what I was thinking too. It was distracting. The camera was moving too fast.
Mm-hmm.
It just kept going around and around, and it took away from the moment of them, you know, making the connection. They're spending time together. They're sharing the food. I wasn't even paying attention to them anymore. I'm like, is this going to stop revolving any minute now, any second now? And then, you know, when it stops and the waiter comes over and says the bill's been paid for. It's like, oh my God, thank God it stopped spinning. I don't even care what happens right now.
I see what he was going for in having this endlessly revolving tracking shot. I assume it's a tracking shot.
Mm-hmm.
How else would you do that? Or like a guy pushing a dolly for like, he just vomits after going around like 400 times.
And that's why they stopped it and just stopped.
All right, get Kevin over here. Kevin, okay, we changed the scene because our dolly operator passed out, so now you're going to pay the tab. No, but yeah, like, two things. Like you're saying, off-air, I guess, and when we started to kind of talk about it, like 6 minutes or like 3 minutes in a two-hour movie that you don't love the camera work, you know, you can forgive as an artistic thing. And then the other side of it is I understand what he was doing, because he was trying to make it dreamlike, and then Kevin Spacey's character jumping in
just
breaks it.
Yeah, exactly. Just shatters it.
You know,
he's in his own little world, everything's going well, and all of a sudden the reality kicks in that, you know, he's not really allowed to stop driving.
Exactly.
Well, he has to make the choice.
He uses broken the line legs from Monsters, Inc.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah.
Before we get it too much into actual detail, I wanted to quickly get that scene out of the way, because I think it's collectively the only scene in the film that we don't like. Yes.
I wouldn't even say that I didn't like it. I just thought
the camera,
it could have been a little slower. It was just so fast. I'm like, wine glasses, touching the wine glasses, seeing the, you know, and then
you got disoriented, and then you couldn't make that connection to the characters.
Yeah, almost like. You know why? I think it's because you're watching a movie with so many car chases, and it's still at the beginning of the movie, but you're sort of already in that gear, right?
Yeah,
where you're going
motion.
To see, you're going to see all kinds of cuts and action, and all of a sudden it's like, are people going to start shooting? Why are we spinning around so much? Mm-hmm. So you're kind of more alert.
Did he drug her?
Yeah, something's about to happen, right?
It's in the cheesecake.
Exactly. But no, they're having this sweet moment, and it's distracting because it kind of elevates your adrenaline, getting you ready to see some action.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing's going to happen other than, you know, Doc, his boss, is still there, and he's going to pay for his bill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I wouldn't even say I didn't like it. Just too fast.
Mm. I also really liked the mechanism of him kind of having this technological boundary where he never got past the iPod. He just kept putting more music on iPods instead of getting a phone or because he doesn't
something
need it
bigger.
You know,
he's using cassettes.
Yeah, and then he's doing his own music on cassettes.
On cassette. But he's got all this other equipment, but he's
but
putting
it's all
it on
pretty
cassette.
Like it looks, it's like old, stuff that you either found in the garbage can or like a dumpster, rather, or like got at like a thrift shop and stuff like that. Stuff that like you and I would both go nuts, and you know, we'd see it in like a cash converters or something, and
cash
be like,
converters,
And like Devin, so who's walking by right now, He says, peace.
Has he seen it?
No, I don't think so. Have you seen Baby Driver yet, Devin? Yeah, it's good.
My sister was saying she did not enjoy it.
Whoa.
You know what, though? Her main complaint was over-stylization, which I can totally see.
Oh, yeah, with him?
Because that can get a little bit...
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah.
The laundromat. Do they separate the colors in this imaginary world between red, yellow, blue?
Yeah. You don't separate your clothes into red, yellow, and blue?
I don't even separate whites and darks.
So you probably
can't
hear any of this on the recording, so it's useless.
Hang on, hang on.
Even the... You know, again, these are not my complaints. I haven't seen the movie yet.
Yeah, no.
But I could see it from that intro 6-minute scene when he's doing the vocals, the John Spencer Blues Explosion song. He's like singing along and like tapping on the drum, and just the way that I don't know. It's just.
You know what's funny though? Years ago, you remember Mitchell telling us when we were on tour about. A drum tape that had come out, a training tape that was actually that you could like do in your car, and it was him like, you know, you start up the car, ding ding ding, and then you turn on the signals like, and then like, do you remember this? Him telling the story.
I don't remember.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Absurd.
Yeah, sorry.
But yeah, just that it's just not the type of thing that you would see somebody do, that it seems cartoonish in some ways.
I think it's on purpose, the cheese. Like they really milk the cheese, even the dreamy sequences.
milk the cheese.
Well, because there has to be the relief from the tension, right? And they almost, it's not even good relief. It's almost like, okay, this is really cheesy. It's on purpose. The way they interact with each other, the way he sees... what is her name? Deborah. Right? Every time he imagines her, it's just like,
it's so
magical.
Dreamlike.
There's
it
a
looks
rainbow
like,
in the sky.
We were joking, or yeah. I said to you, like, is it just me? Or every time you see her leaning on a car and like his dream sequences, it looks like she's like just endlessly having an orgasm.
Yeah, she's
just
always
like,
smiling.
Just orgasm forever. Like, yeah, I want to feel as good as she looks in that scene.
What is she on?
Yeah, she's on something good. But to talk, just because that is a good point, the dialogue thing, the stylized dialogue. But you got to, okay, one of Edgar Wright's favorite films and is The Driver. He referenced it many a times that it is one of his favorite films. There's barely any dialogue in the film at all. And this is a throwback to that kind of thing, too, like Vanishing Point, The Driver, The Getaway, these sorts of films where everything is boiled down to just enough so that you understand, so you can move on. Because all that's important is the action set pieces, and they give you like just the amount of time to do, you know, to build the relationships, just the amount of time to get like a little bit of comedy, et cetera, right? And that's what, like, Edgar Wright understands that. And I was saying, like, both a horridy and a calmer. I'm having a hard time here.
Yep.
One moment, please. A horror and a comedy director. I want to see every action film from now on directed by these cats, because the shock and the tension building, those two elements, those are key mechanisms in those genres. Whereas it just seems like every big budget tentpole, you know, superhero film or this or that, It seems as though there is always some action beats that have no merit, or there's others that are overdeveloped of no consequence.
Lean on here,
right?
You could sit.
Yeah, that's true. That's what chairs are normally.
But so that's how, you know, how I would rationalize it. You do have to go into it understanding what it is, and that it is an homage to the 70s era driving films, with a little bit more character development.
Yeah.
About 20 minutes more character development. That's about it.
You know what now that I think about it, now that you mentioned it was overly stylized and that, you know, your sister didn't like it, for example, and we were and you're talking about the suspense behind the way the scenes build up. And I was mentioning the relief from the suspense in a way, even when it's not a car chase or, you know, the criminals talking to each other, you're always uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Like he keeps you uncomfortable the whole time. Even when he's like nothing's going on, he's sitting at home with his, I guess it's like foster dad, and he's dancing really cheesy and singing at him and stuff. You're like, oh God, this is making me uncomfortable. So you're never really relaxed, right? The mm-hmm. whole movie, you're just sort of reacting to it in a way that is not like, oh, this is, even with the way he talks to his girlfriend, the way they talk to each other.
Are they even girlfriend?
And well, I don't know what they are. Not, they're just,
they're, yeah,
it
they're,
just, that makes you uncomfortable.
They're courting.
I know I'm not.
It's a cheese. That's great.
Bringing up movies that are that much similar, maybe, but I mean, here's what I would lay out for you mm-hmm. here is you've got like a movie like your Ocean's 12 or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Let's put that on one end of the spectrum.
Okay. Which is a heist movie, no driving.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm mm-hmm. just, yeah.
There's still planning involved.
And then, maybe like a movie like the Big Hit starring Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, yeah. And Lou Diamond Phillips. Yeah.
And like
that's a real,
you know, maybe somewhere gem. In the middle of the spectrum is, let's say a movie like Gone in 60 Seconds. Okay, now each of these movies are kind of crime action comedies, right? And all
you
of
say
them,
so.
All of them, I would say, have very like surreal level, like pseudo perfect dialogue. Kind of going on, right? Like everything, it feels written. It doesn't feel natural between mm-hmm. these people,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But I can't go too far to that one end of the spectrum, mm-hmm. Or I can't.
Are we comparing this movie to the Big Hit? Because this mm-hmm. is not the Big Hit.
Yeah. I can't be somewhere in the middle of this spectrum. I feel like a movie has to either be cheesy like the Big mm-hmm. Hit and not taking itself seriously whatsoever, mm-hmm. or it has to only give you enough of that sort of over the top dialogue that you get maybe like one or two little chucks.
Yeah.
In the film that well, don't take you out of it too much mm-hmm. like that other, because then there's this danger zone of Gone in 60 Seconds where you're fucked, you know?
Yeah. Well, this isn't the Big Hit or Gone in 60 Seconds.
I know.
And it's also not Ocean's 11 because you kind of hit the nail on the head with regards to where a misconception would be with this film, mm-hmm. because a lot of the marketing is like you see like John Bernthal in a fucking bank, like with a machine gun, and you're mm-hmm. like, okay, so this is going to be a heist movie. It's not. Mm-hmm. You don't go in the banks.
Yeah, like, you never see the heist, actually.
Where any of the actual, like now, like the newer trailers for the film, you never mm-hmm. see any of the... Like it's because it's not what it's about. It's a and that's what it's pitched as in writing. But who reads anymore? It's a driving film.
I don't know. I should stop dispensing any sort of opinions on a movie that I haven't. That I've only seen.
That's
6
actually
minutes
kind of fun
of.
Though. It's great. Just compare it to things.
But I mean, it looks cool. I like a good car chase. That's what I find too often, and that's what I hope isn't the case with mm-hmm. with this movie. Is that it does go a little bit too or like. Either not goofy enough mm-hmm. or too damn goofy and kind of
I feel like it's right in that magic spot, but I also like this kind of movie, but so do you, because we have conversations about some obscure car movies that I wouldn't think that you'd seen, and then we've geeked out on them, so I would highly recommend it. With that, let's go to break. We'll come back and we'll get into some of the finer details. Okay.
Sorry, I didn't realize it. What?
Oh, Steven Spielberg's first film, Duel. The truck's just following them along. You haven't seen Duel?
No. They did a... Did they do a remake or did they do...
I think they may have, which is ridiculous because it's literally just a truck following a car for an hour and then it drives off a cliff. That's the movie.
Wow.
Like, it's, they stop for gas and it stops and sits across the street and revs the engine. and then it goes again and then just follows
That's
you
really
and like
spooky.
Flashes its lights and shit.
Yeah, because I feel like there was like an early 2000s movie very similar with like maybe it was more
Joyride?
Like a trucker, but there was a part where he was chasing them in a semi for an inordinate amount of time.
Mm. Yeah, you never see the killer in Duel either. You never see, or like killer, like just driver. He just drives a truck. He got cut off and they just followed him for a really long time. That's the movie. All right, so we're back, and let's get into characters a little bit, and then we'll go over finer details of the film, because we're not doing so well so far. We're a little, it's late in the evening. We just saw the flick.
Just
we're a little bit...
A little
yeah,
sleepy?
Yeah, a wee
just
bit.
Just a tad. Yeah. Okay, so we've been kind of going back and forth about the comparing its style to different movies and, you know, previous films, and there's something that I realize now... Jamie Foxx's character, so Bats, right? Mm-hmm. As you're watching the
he
movie,
he is so Bats. Great observation.
But you're watching this movie, and all the characters, it's very fresh, modern, kind of cool. You know, everyone's very calm. This is our job. And then he comes in, and he's more of like a 90s action heist movie character. It's mm-hmm. like you're in the wrong movie. It feels like they plucked him out of another movie where people go absolutely crazy and shoot people up, you know, and jump out of a sunroof and like and do crazy shit. And they put him in this movie where everyone's very calm, cool, collected, jazzy, yeah. you know, level-headed. And then you've got this loose cannon from, you know, a movie from 94 suddenly wanting to kill everyone. But you see what I mean, right? Like, yeah. he doesn't match the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. But that's
oh, yeah.
that's one thing that I just realized. Like, it feels like he's not... He just doesn't match. And he makes everyone uncomfortable on these heists and the getaways.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. It's apparent if you look at a character like Bats. The moment that he comes into play and you can... There's little subtle... hints that there's something really wrong with this guy and something will happen that has to do with this guy. So, you know, baby's reaction, what was his name? John Hamm's character. Buddy? Was it Buddy?
Buddy,
yeah. And Darling, they, you know, their reaction to him, everyone's, the way that they were dealing with Bats, there was such a huge buildup because it was almost like you kind of laugh it off like, yes, that guy's crazy. But at the same time, you know, someone's going to get killed or you think he's going to try to kill baby. He just, there's something wrong with
yep.
him, right?
Intention
and it's so
builds,
well
yeah.
done. And when, spoiler, I mean, obviously there's a spoiler alert at the beginning,
yeah.
but when he finally dies, like you do not expect that. That
yeah.
was unexpected.
Best moment of the film.
They show it to you yeah. like three times. He looks at the truck. He's like, this is the truck. And he looks at, you know, he looks at where he's sitting. He looks
it
at the truck.
Turns off the passenger
yeah.
side airbag.
You never expect that he is planning this, but he's like ready to do it.
Yeah.
Right. He's like, okay, if I have to, I'm going to just drive through that. It's fucked up. I love it.
Yeah.
It's great.
Oh, it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And like the thought to just like, that's one of those like Raimi-esque cuts. Like we mm-hmm. were just talking about where he's looking. He's looking at Bats. He's mm-hmm. looking at the truck. He's looking at Bats. And then it cuts to his thumb on the passenger side airbag button.
Yeah.
Turning it off.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
puts
and
it in drive. And it's so fucking good.
So good. It was so gory. Too.
Oh, man.
Like, right through him.
And before we go any farther, I got to say, like, Jamie Foxx, it's very, very, very hard to make me not like Jamie Foxx.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Leave the baby.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Why? Just, yeah.
Amazing performance. Mm-hmm. Like, larger than life. But to me, you know, I could see someone being like, oh, you know, he's chomping up the scenery, this kind of thing. This, you know, seeing that in reviews. And I haven't admittedly looked at any reviews because I wanted to see it cold, as I generally do with all of Edgar Wright stuff, right? From Hot Fuzz forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think he was. I think he was what the character needed to be. Like, he was just like everything else in this film. Like, he was just evil enough
yeah.
that it was like that you consented with. Like, mm-hmm. and that was the point where, because that was the one,
mm-hmm.
you know, obviously things ratchet up and ratchet up as the film goes on.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the one that allowed you to say, like, that's fine. Like, mm-hmm. Baby can do this.
Yeah.
And then moving forward, everyone else kind of, like, that seal's already been broken. The, mm-hmm. you know, the no killing, the no, you know, don't be involved kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The gloves are off.
Yep.
So at this point, now you as an audience, are acclimating mm-hmm. to him kind of starting to kill everyone.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. like, you know, whatever.
Well, he's got to do it.
Yeah. And so his character is perfect in that way. Well, and his character delivers a large part of what one could consider as exposition beyond Kevin Spacey, mm-hmm. who is basically strictly there for exposition and then a mm-hmm. you know, wonderful redeemer moment.
It's funny because that's actually true. The Jamie Foxx character is what makes you sort of buy into what's happening. Mm-hmm. If you watch any action movie where there's shooting, getaway, you're sort of on the side of the main characters, like, yeah, go run. And mm-hmm. in your mind, you've bought in and it's fine.
Yeah.
But here you have, first off,
John Bernthal, yeah. in the opening sequence, exactly. getting a little mouthy, just, and yeah. you're like, oh, good thing, you know.
But you know, it doesn't really, it's like, oh, well, they're criminals, so yeah. it's cool, right? And, like, and, it's part of it, right?
And then,
yeah. And then
Fox shows up
and he's the one that you're like, oh, wait, no, these are bad people. And yeah. all of a sudden it's like, I'm not buying into this.
And he's killing everybody. Yeah. And again,
like, why?
Wonderfully for edited. No reason. Gotta yeah. say it again. Those cuts mm-hmm. between Baby's, you know, sunglasses, mm-hmm. eyes and yep. the guard.
Yep.
On the seat, on the floor, mm-hmm. or on the ground, rather, outside of the truck.
That's exactly it. When he rolls, well, even just, okay, so you see him, they get out, you see the truck, they all run over, mm. and then he rolls the car forward so you don't see anything. Mm-hmm. You just hear stuff, mm-hmm. right, what's happening, and then he rolls back and they all get in and he looks over and he sees the guard on the floor bleeding, right? Yeah. And it's exactly what you said earlier. It's that kind of horror sort of feel where you don't see much and yeah. you just, your imagination is worse. Exactly. You feel it. So you see it the way he sees it. He looks over, he sees this, he's like, oh shit.
Do they stick to that shot too? Do they stick to that like wide angle kind of medium shot from outside the car of Baby? So they go over and then he cuts yeah. to that and then he moves forward and then he moves back?
Yeah,
or is there a few cuts in
no,
between?
No, it's just from
oh,
what I remember.
That's brilliant.
As you see
if they
it
do that,
and then
that's
they go
fucking
forward
cool.
and then he rolls back.
I love that shit.
Yeah, I don't think he.
That's like
I don't
film
think they,
geeking
yeah,
out
I don't
moment.
Think they pan away from it. It's just what they don't show you. So when
yeah,
so
in my head I had
this
it. Go back to a close up of him, but maybe you're right. I think you're right.
I you know even if they did, it still gives you that effect where yeah. you're seeing it the way he sees it because he rolls up, he's hearing everything, and then he rolls back, and everyone gets in. You know, you see it cuts to everybody running towards the car. They all get in, and then he looks over and sees the guard. So all of a sudden, you're like, oh wait. And he sees it, he mm-hmm. reacts, it throws him off, so he, you know, almost screws up the getaway. He starts crashing into everyone. He's, you know, he's discombobulated because he just saw this guard on the ground. He's not a murderer, mm-hmm. so it shocks him, right? But then you're kind of in the same sort of panicky mode, like, oh shit, he's freaking out. They're not going to get away, right? So now you don't know if you want the bad guys to get away or not. Is he a bad guy? Is he part of this? Is Baby one of the victims? Like, mm-hmm. it throws you off.
One thing that I wonder if they were trying to do with that scene is when they pull in, mm-hmm. Baby sees the plainclothes officer mm-hmm. or a plainclothed guard, mm-hmm. right?
Is that who was in the truck?
I assume so. Like, they keep referring to him as a good Samaritan, et cetera. Yeah. But he had, like, a case with... And
he has
had
all these weapons.
Yeah, and he had, like, a rifle
Why
and
is
so
he
forth.
So armed?
So my inclination was that he was a plain-clothed officer following the truck. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if it had enough money to knock off, then mm-hmm. might be suitable. So Baby sees that and identifies it, in my mind, because I identified it. Mm-hmm. So if I'm, as an audience member, identifying it... Mm-hmm. then he's identifying it because at that point in the film, I'm seeing through his eyes. In fact, the only moment that I can think of in the film is the car garage at the end, which we'll get to. That's mm-hmm. the only kind of moment where the Breaks audience away. Is subject to information that Baby doesn't have.
Oh, when, yeah. Yeah. When he doesn't, yeah, when he jumps out.
Yeah. yeah. Which we'll get to. Or not.
But you're right. It's totally through his eyes.
So is he... is he baiting the system? Like, is it that he thinks he's that good, or is it that he's hoping that, is he deep down in some dark place hoping to get caught so that it can be over?
For sure.
You know?
And even, it's so obvious when they're at the post office, too. Mm-hmm. The first thing he asks that woman when she's nice to the kid is, are you working tomorrow?
Yeah.
Right? Like, he feels bad. He wants them to get caught. He doesn't want to be part of it.
No.
You're right.
It's interesting.
I think you got something there. I think you're
right. Yeah, but because in the moment, because I wasn't able to contextualize it in the scene, and obviously it'd come off from the whole Michael Myers joke mask mix-up situation, which... That would have been a really, really good joke if it wasn't in the trailer.
Yeah.
Because I did see that trailer.
Yeah.
And so that sucked because that was a good joke. And I even snickered a little bit in the theater, but I found it funny when it was in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of alternate takes of stuff I noticed between the trailer and what was actually just used in the film, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind that. If you're cutting a trailer like 8 months before a film comes out, mm-hmm. or 10 months or a year, then cool.
I prefer if they do that. I don't want to see the movie before. Just tell me what it's about.
Just sell me the ticket.
Mm-hmm. Give me the idea of it.
You know. By the way, Isa Gonzalez, where did I just see her? She just did some screen testing for Batgirl.
Oh, really?
I think. Or no, Catwoman.
Oh.
Yeah.
We might
see her in a DCEU film
I can't think of anything else she's in.
From Dusk Till Dawn TV show is the only thing I can think of. And I watched like 2 episodes of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
She plays the Selma Hayek character.
I don't feel like I've ever seen her before, ever, in anything. But then again, I felt the same way about Baby.
Yeah.
Right? What's his name? Ansel something something something.
Ansel something something something.
Ansel...
Elgort.
Yeah. Albert?
Elgort.
Elgort? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I had not seen him in anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And he's great. Just bland enough for this film.
Yeah.
Just bland enough that they can turn him into whatever they want.
What do you think of Kevin Spacey in this flick? Because I don't think he's going to be either of our favorite characters, is he?
No, but he just played what he... is really good at playing.
Mm-hmm. I felt like he was kind of channeling a similar thing to what he was doing in 21.
Yeah, he's so good at that character.
Yeah.
He's calm, scary, cool, as hell. Collected. He doesn't even have to try.
Intimidating,
right?
Yeah,
exactly.
There's something about him that's very put together in this film and yet fearful. And the fear... Even though he's very in control, but it's that fear of being out of control that makes him so scary.
Yeah.
Because if anyone questions him, if anyone does anything questionable, say, for example, like the cat on the second heist there with the hat tattoo.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone loves hats. Who doesn't like hats?
It was originally hate, but I got it. I changed it to hat. Because to help with them. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How's that working out for you? Who doesn't like ads?
That's great. So good.
Great exchange.
I had no idea Flea was in this movie.
Yeah.
When he popped up, all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, it's Flea. Okay. And he was just himself.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to stick him in
a movie. With a fake nose.
Stick him in a movie.
Yep.
It's so funny. But, okay, so
just
hang on.
Put him in the back of a car.
Back to Kevin Spacey, though.
Yeah.
And you mentioned. How he's intimidating, his character's intimidating. It's effortless intimidation.
Yeah.
How do you feel about how he sort of switches at the end and pretty much, it almost like he sacrifices himself
for Baby. I think two things strike me that could have happened. When I was watching the film, to be honest, the fact that they let him drive... the last heist gave me one bit of insight into the fact of how Kevin Spacey's character looks at him. Number two was the introduction of the nephew, Sam.
Yeah.
Because it right there, something struck me as odd. Because, okay, so this guy who's like an underworld kingpin kind of situation.
Take my nephew.
he's traveling around with his nephew, and his nephew is spending enough time with him mm-hmm. to not, or rather to know his operation and how yeah. it works and this and that and the finer details. So if you are, if you hold family in such high regard, mm-hmm. what has happened that you don't have a child of your own? The yeah, fact that it was a nephew,
yeah.
I had this feeling that that was going to play back in with the whole love thing.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was going to play out like it did, admittedly, but I thought that there was going to be a pep talk. Like, I had this feeling. I was just seeing this, like, real, you know, like, Goodwill Hunting, like, I got to see about a girl kind of
yeah.
moment
yeah.
somewhere in the film. And, I, you know, I was actually really happy that I didn't get that because they had done such a good job of, like, even though Kevin Spacey's character was strictly there to kind of play parent and deliver expository dialogue in large part, I was glad that he got a moment of redemption and of sacrifice because there was really no other way to kill off that character either. So, but I felt like there was something coming. I knew that there had to be a reason why that was the nephew and not the son.
Yeah.
That was the big thing.
Because
of the fact that he knew so much. If he was just a dumb kid, like when they first went into the bank, it didn't mean anything to me.
Yeah.
But as soon as the kid said the stuff about the heist, like this many cameras, this many attendants, I'm like, holy shit. So this kid spends enough time with him.
Yeah, you don't even have to shoot her or whatever.
Yeah.
She was nice. You don't even have to,
Yeah, she'll just hand you the big bills.
Yeah. So you think baby was kind of like a son figure to him?
No, I think that I think that he saw something in him, and then
he wants good things to happen for him.
Well, I think he saw himself a little bit before he was corrupted, but I think he saw the vulnerability that he was corrupted by. So, for example, like he saw that he could use him.
Yeah,
but then of course you do see the familiarity, the kind of tenderness of their relationship with like buying him the gloves and this sort of thing. And then also the disciplining you see with him. So maybe, I guess a father figure is a good way of saying it because you see him, he has to dispose of that body.
Yeah. For example, he's emotionally invested in him.
In him.
Yeah. Sorry, no, go ahead.
Well, I just mean that I thought most likely you're going to see something with his backstory, or not see it, but something narrated, because everything else that Kevin Spacey does is just fucking talking about stuff. So he would explain that, I had a love interest and I loved her very much and she was taken from me, so I took everything from this guy and now I'm him, or something like that. You know, I was expecting that kind of moment, and I didn't get that. Instead, I just got an "I was in love once," and I thought,
that's it.
You know what? Everything else in this film is like that. Everything else in this film is
shallow.
You know, let's go. I'm hungry. They go into a restaurant. They get fucking pops.
I know.
They take one sip of them.
It's true.
And then they leave.
Everything's very shallow. You don't get much from anything, but it's intense enough that you feel like, okay, I get it. I get it. Like, it's enough, right? Yeah. Which is almost realistic in a sense, because when you meet people, they don't tell you their whole life story, but you get a feel for someone's personality, right? And they do that with all the characters. They don't go deep into any of them. But something I found really interesting that sort of threw me off is after Darling gets killed, right? And John Hamm is coming after him, and, you know, he's killed Bats. Like, he's just going on a freaking killing spree. You think, okay, so his boss, Doc, is going to come after him now. Like, he's screwed. He's dead. Instead, he calls him and he says, "I need help."
Yeah.
I'm like, but why would he help him? Like, he just totally fucked up his operation.
Yeah, and why does he know that he can trust that he won't kill him?
Exactly.
It's very interesting.
Like, he actually goes there and he brings freaking Deborah with him. He brings her.
That's how confident he is that Doc won't fuck him up.
Exactly, right? So that's kind of interesting. I thought that was an interesting moment simply because he's keeping her safe. He goes to pick her up because he knows that she's in danger, but then he brings her over to his boss, the one person he should be the most afraid of. It's fucked up.
But it's also indicative of the fact that, like, he was confident that when he was square with him that he would just get out. you know?
Yeah.
And then it was that controlling, disciplining figure mm-hmm. of Kevin Spacey in this film that drags him back in.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
But you never really think, like, okay, he's threatening him. He might hurt everyone he loves, blah, 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 blah. You know, the threat that he gives them. But at the same time, he says things to him like, you're not going to live in this shithole much longer. Or you'll be out of this shithole soon when he goes to his building. Mm-hmm. Or, you know.
He genuinely wants him to do well.
Yeah, he wants to see him succeed because he knows he can be good at it.
Yeah. Okay. Favorite character, least favorite character?
Okay, so I really, really liked John Hamm's character. I even when he was trying to kill Baby, I wasn't angry at him. I'm like, I get it. He's pissed off, you know. His wife got shot. It is Baby's fault.
Yeah.
Right? So I get it. He's going to want revenge.
And it's not unexpected from the character.
No.
That's the thing. It's not unexpected. They literally fucking say it.
Yeah,
in
they
the
build
diner.
Up to it. She even says he killed someone for giving her a dirty look. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you expect it from his character, and it's consistent. But he's also nice enough that he sort of sticks up for Baby at one point.
And
you know,
and
they listen
to
music. Yeah. So, you know, he, and
great
when
tune,
he comes after
way.
Him, when he comes after him, when he goes to leave at 2 a.m. for his road trip,
yep.
the first, you know, he asks him where he's going, and it's bad enough. I have to worry about bats, and I have to worry about you
don't
too.
Come back. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So he, you know, if it was bats who pops into the car anyway, he would have just killed him.
Yeah.
Or, you know, when he went, it just escalated right away.
Another brilliant turn in that film, because he's walking through and you see bats waking up.
Yeah, and you're like, oh,
and you're
shit.
Like, oh no, bats is going to be there. When it's John Hamm's character, when it's Buddy,
yeah,
you feel relieved, but
yeah.
you still feel
like he's caught.
Yeah, like he's caught red-handed.
Where the hell is bats? Well, you know he's coming too because he opened his eyes, right?
Yeah,
but you don't expect him to have the little recorder.
Yeah,
and that's is
the twist on the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that was pretty good.
Speaking of which, C.J. Jones in this flick really mm-hmm. really good as the adopted father. Really interesting. I love the idea of this boy who's kind of mute by choice
mm-hmm.
being adopted by a deaf man
yeah.
and raised. And it's interesting the similarity between Deborah and he in that regard, that he's mm-hmm. now taking care of his stepfather, who seems to care for him in a much deeper way than his actual dad did by the flashback mm-hmm. sequences. So you see the importance of that connection to him.
Yeah.
And then Deborah recently, or it's alluded to, that she recently lost her mother and that mm-hmm. she had been caring for her, you know.
Yeah.
And now she wishes
Has
she just had
to hold
someone
her down
to
either.
Carry. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wishes she had someone to care for, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She seems like she's lost, you know, which a lot of people you know, say that after they lose a loved one who they've been caring for.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard. So sad. Okay, sorry. So favorite character, John Hamm.
I think so.
Least favorite character?
Okay, so that's tough. Oh my God, who would be my least favorite?
That says a lot for this flick that you're, you know, having trouble here.
It would have to be like a side character, just, okay. you know, a security guard or something.
Okay, well, let's make it real difficult for you then.
Can I make a Flea character?
I mean, absolutely.
Really, he was just in that movie
because
he's Flea.
Yeah.
And it was almost like, and I have no problem with him, but it's just when I see someone like that in a movie like this, it just feels like a gimmick.
Yes. So my favorite character in the film. You know what? I'm gonna go with Deborah.
Really?
Lily James is Deborah. You
I
know
thought
what?
You were gonna go with a young baby.
It's weird, but she immediately talks about the dead mother.
Yeah.
And, like, very insincerely. She alludes to all kinds of other stuff that's, like, painful to him, and he doesn't want to talk about it. Also, like, those really stylized kind of fantasy sequences, that could play like fucking Happy Gilmore, you know, yeah. Like, go to your happy place, you know, and mm-hmm. you have, it could be like that. So I think there's got to be something to the performance. There's got to be something to it that makes it work. And also, you have to believe, that this character, who is now free of debt and is very good at his job, mm-hmm. a dangerous job, mind you, and a job that sucks his soul from him. Mm-hmm. But
don't all jobs?
Yeah, all jobs do.
Jobs.
Yeah. But you have to believe that this young man would give up everything, even, you know, to the point of possibly he does give up his life for all intents and purposes,
yep.
For the chance mm-hmm. at love with this girl, or for feelings, how intensely he feels about this young woman. And so there has to be something there for me to buy in. It's very hard for me to get involved and emotionally invested in the, you know, budding young love kind of thing, because a lot of times, you know, maybe I'm just becoming a bitter old man or something, but I'm just like, yeah, been there, done that. I just get to the fucking car chase scenes. Like, in a movie like this, mm-hmm. you know, because we're talking about how a lot of things don't matter and it's minimal and you just need this much time and that much time. I was really, really invested in my time with them, with those two characters specifically. And I didn't even mind the final sequence of the film where she gets involved with the crowbar.
Yeah.
Again, that's like a killer for me. You know, if it's like when someone's it's like Terminator 2 when John Connor comes out and like, ah, like, no, mm-hmm. no, you know, you're dead. Like, mm-hmm. bad idea, you know, and it's the same with that. You're no match for seasoned criminal John Hamm.
Yeah.
With a handgun. So, yeah. Like, there has to be something to the performance. And that's how I'm quantizing it. Because, you know, instinctively, it would be like Jamie Foxx or Kevin Spacey or John Hamm or any of these really good performances in the film. But all I keep coming back to is the fact that, like, I am totally invested in Baby getting the fuck out of there.
Yep.
And why am I cool with him killing everybody and this and that? And all that I keep coming back to is CJ Jones and Lily James, mm-hmm. those two characters, yep. grounding his world makes everything else worthwhile. So you have to, you know.
His dreams, right? Like, she embodies his dreams. And you mentioned earlier that, yeah, she does mention all the things that hurt him, but she's not in any way malicious ever.
It's from a pure place.
She's super positive. Mm-hmm. She's an optimist. She's very happy. She's almost very innocent sounding. Yeah. You know, she has no idea what he's doing. And when those people all come in, like all the criminals come in and they sit down, that's when she sees like something is wrong.
Yeah.
Right. And you can tell that she can see something's wrong. But even then, she's
on the cusp of crying.
Yeah.
Throughout
exactly.
those scenes, but it's not overt. Mm-hmm. It's subdued, you know, here's what I'm going to do for my least favorite character. I'm going to go with the undercover cop from the gun purchasing mm-hmm. sequence with the butcher.
Yeah.
You talked about that you like the butcher and, you know, welcome to the charcuterie and all this stuff.
That was
stuff
entertaining.
And all.
Yeah, but you know he's dead.
Yeah. Well, you know that Jamie Foxx, because he fucking says we may not leave in this car. So, which means in Bat's speak in this film means we will not leave in this car.
But even when he talks to your least favorite character there, the undercover cop guy, although he was part of the team.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he was a crooked cop.
Yeah, he was a crooked cop.
But, you know, he's like, oh, have we met before? He's like, no, because you're still alive. And you're like, oh, great. He's going to kill everyone.
Yeah.
At that point, you would think they'd have their guard up a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with the undercover cop from that scene. I don't like his... He's the one that comes back at the end and says bananas... Again to
Spacey. Oh, yeah, because one of them didn't die.
Yeah.
That's right. When the car blows up, when he throws the grenade.
He comes in body armor and bullshit.
Well, when they're driving away and Jamie Foxx throws in the grenade and then it kind of pans, mm-hmm. you see the car explode and then you see the background, you see the one hand on the ground mm-hmm. moves a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, is that just for effect? Like, oh, look, he's not dead yet or is he going to come back?
Yeah.
It's true. Bananas.
I honestly believe that it's one of the most enjoyable films that I saw this year because I didn't have to put on any fucking goggles yeah. or like oh, lube true, anything yeah. up and inject it into my asshole or anything to enjoy the film.
Yeah.
I didn't have to strap into a seat to like move me around and like, you know, I didn't have to give a blood sample at the door or like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just, I went in, I sat down in a regular seat and watched a movie.
Okay, so... besides characters and something that you sort of mentioned earlier, I don't know what it was, but it made me think, oh, jazz. The soundtrack was awesome for mm-hmm. this movie. I loved it. It was great. All over the place.
Mm-hmm.
All over the place. It was great.
Like a true music lover's
yeah.
collection would be.
He was really all over the place. It was at the tequila.
Yep.
And then, you know, and then he's listening to jazz mm-hmm. or Queen or just, he's all over the place. I love it.
The action sequences syncing up with the music was
yeah,
just
that was cool.
really fun. Like, it was fun. That's what it was. Like, and even really when John Hamm is shooting, that was one of my favorites in the after Darling dies,
mm-hmm.
when he's shooting the cops and it's still in time to the fucking drum hits and the song.
Mm-hmm. But it was really good music. It was more, I don't want to say obscure because it wasn't obscure, but it wasn't obvious music. Mm-hmm. Not music you would normally pick for a film like that.
Yeah. How much, what was the pizza company in it? It wasn't Papa John's, was it?
It was Goodfellas or
Goodfellas?
Something. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. Real pizza place?
It is here.
It is here in Canada. Different logo though.
I believe so. It's in Streetsville.
Yeah, there's one up near my mom in the middle of nowhere. We're Googling it. Atlanta.
Yeah, because like, oh, the other fellas, or he kind of makes a play on words.
Goodfellas Pizza is yeah. a legitimate pizza place in Atlanta. Yeah. Goodfellas Pizza, located cool. At 615 Spring Street, Northwest Atlanta, Georgia.
Looking for
close, yeah. This episode brought to you by Goodfellas Pizza and Wings, located at 615 Spring Street, Northwest Atlanta, Georgia. If you're looking for a great pizza and you're in Atlanta, go to Goodfellas Pizza tonight. Favorite scenes.
I really like when you see him making his music in his own little world.
Yeah, that's really cool.
How he's taking, you know, the little recordings that he takes, that he makes. And you just know that's not a good idea. It's yeah. super incriminating, right?
Exactly.
But he just
does it because he's naive.
Yeah, he's so removed from it in his mind. He doesn't even, you know, he's not a part of that world. But he is, and he doesn't think about it that way, that he can just sort of make music out of it, right?
Yeah. I love how it comes back to say exactly what you just said at the end of the mm-hmm. film. Like, we couldn't even make up something that stupid.
Yeah, exactly. What were you thinking? Like, really? You have all these tapes. Yeah, and he's got really cool things on different tapes. You see the names of the different tapes, and it's like, oh, he's creative. That's great. But, you know, he's basically journaling the crimes mm-hmm. in a way, right?
He's probably not disposing of the raw tapes either.
No.
He's probably just reusing them for more yeah. songs.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's so true. You can understand why Jamie Foxx's character would freak the hell
and
out.
And John
yeah.
Hamm.
Yeah, they freak out.
Kevin Spacey's a little more reserved because
he knows
he
him.
Thinks he's got his thumb on him, you know.
And he knows he didn't do it. He's not, you know, he's not doing it to rat them out. He's not.
Well, he knows he's not a cop because he's yeah. seen him boost his car.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how, that would be, well, then again, that would be a rather intelligent way to do it, but he was very young, so
but he knows
be able
his,
to hire that person as a police officer.
He knows his personality.
Yeah, but he's right? he's not exactly like, super developed socially.
That's why he says, like, you know what, go home, I'll get another driver.
Mm-hmm.
Just so that, it's almost as if so that everyone else is comfortable,
mm-hmm.
not because he's pissed off at him.
Yeah.
Right?
And they're keeping all the tapes.
Yeah. So, like, no big deal. We've got the tapes
from mm-hmm.
cassettes. The car chase / car fight. The bumper cars
yeah.
in the parking lot. I thought yeah. that was great.
So cool.
Mm-hmm.
I love that shit.
Mm-hmm.
I do. And the whole sequence, I was like, we need a longer sequence of him driving backwards.
Yeah.
I really wanted, like, a cool, like, reverse chase a mm-hmm. decent amount of time. Mm-hmm. It's just something I really dig. And I haven't seen it really well done in at least mm-hmm. probably 8 to 10 years mm-hmm. a film that I really, really, really enjoyed. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but just something that I've really, really, really enjoyed watching where there's like an extended reverse car chase sequence. Mm-hmm. And that one was really, really simple. And it was extended to the, you know, like there was multiple shots and clearly it was done methodically, but it didn't take up a lot of time mm-hmm. in the film. But they didn't, I liked it because they put effort into like using the reverse camera mm-hmm. as a point of view shot in it mm-hmm. and using a ton of cuts between his face and the exterior of the car mm-hmm. and then over to John Hamm and then
the shifting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And giving us a wide angle shot of the two cars and then, mm-hmm. you know, just baby, you know, a medium shot with his car door in the front of his car and this sort of mm-hmm. thing. And they put so much work into that little scene where he's driving in reverse for all of what, less than a minute?
Yeah.
That it felt so fucking important to me that it was satisfying enough that, like, you know, now I feel like I watched a 10-minute sequence of him driving in reverse the entire time. Mm-hmm. You know? And it wasn't comical, it wasn't cartoony, it wasn't like pulling a safe down the street.
No.
Like another franchise has done recently. Like, you know, mm-hmm. it wasn't like the Bad Boys 2 car chase, which I actually love for like such goofy man reasons, I guess. But like just where everything is exploding. It was just real simple and inside of a car garage. I loved it. I really did. I thought it was brilliant. And I love Kevin Spacey getting hit.
Yeah.
And then getting backed over.
Oh,
and they show it.
So harsh.
And I was like, oh my God, this is such a geek
Beep
moment.
Bump right over his face.
Yeah. And again, very horror,
the horror
shot.
Thing.
Yeah. Very horror true. Shot.
Yeah, it's true. It was fucking gory. Even the way Jamie Foxx dies.
Yeah. Oh, such a horror
gory.
Fan moment.
That was awesome.
Brilliant. Yeah. So
very harsh.
I don't know.
Great way to kill him.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Loved it. Cool.
What did you think, to wrap it up, of the conclusion? Baby going to jail.
Yeah.
Very PC 2017.
I was going to say, typically you wouldn't see that.
Yeah, if you went
back.
You
know, they get away, and now it's like, nope, he's got to do time. Like,
yeah.
But they kind of soften it with everyone's testimony.
5 years parole.
Which apparently is not a thing, but I did some reading afterwards.
Yeah.
Apparently that wouldn't happen, but anyway.
Yeah, you wouldn't get parole in 5?
No. And I think, where are they? Atlanta or wherever they are?
Yeah, in Georgia.
And, yeah, that's not a thing. But he, and why? Yeah, well, whatever. So
no,
when during the testimony where everyone's talking about how good of a person he is, and you sort of start, it's like after having watched him kill off a bunch of people and basically just go mental, and you're like, okay, he's going on a killing spree, it almost grounds you again to bring you back to, wait a second, he's only doing this because he had to, and you feel bad for him again, and you sympathize a bit, you empathize with how he feels, and now he's in prison.
Yeah.
They had to put him in prison, but then she keeps writing to him. And then there's the, you know, the magical moment where he envisions himself going out and there's a rainbow.
Yeah.
And everybody's happy, right?
I find it interesting that it starts off black and white and then moves to color.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the ambiguity of that scene being how it closes.
Yeah. Is it real or is it not?
Exactly.
Did he get out? Did he not? Like, no, obviously not. He killed off how many people? He did what? I mean, think about it. Why would he? They give him 25 years. Even if there was parole after 5 years.
There's no proof that he killed any of those people. There's no proof.
Yeah, that's true, too.
And he has all these character witnesses.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, he's getting those. Like, he's been convicted.
Mm-hmm.
But if you went to parole board and said, like,
mm-hmm.
exactly what happened,
mm-hmm.
minus me killing anybody.
Yeah.
And I was just standing there, you know, like, this is what happened.
Kevin,
they found Kevin Spacey run over with a shotgun. You know, like
mm-hmm.
he's the criminal mastermind. You've got all these crooked cops.
Mm-hmm.
You can bring down, and he could get his sentence reduced in the real world.
So?
Sadly, or not sadly, I don't know. Whatever.
In
any case,
they would. I don't think that in a real court case. That
you don't think they play Let's Make a Deal in the real world?
Well, I don't know if I was forced to do it is really a good way to get off. Like, well, they made me do it.
Well, yeah. Some people love to be forced to do it when they get off.
Interesting. It's true. It is very true.
Just an observation.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't want to try it later or anything.
I'm trying to break down how that even works. I'm too tired to think straight.
All right. Yeah, let's wrap it up.
Or we're going to fall asleep at the table.
I completely agree with you. I think that if that film was made in 2007 mm-hmm. or 1997 mm-hmm. or 1987 or 1977, mm-hmm. they would have got away at the end.
Mm-hmm. Now you can't do that.
And now you can't do that.
You just can't do it.
Because there has to be consequences to everyone's actions. Mm-hmm. And I would actually, like, and it doesn't mean, I like the idea. I do.
Yeah. It's more realistic.
It's responsible. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. And I like this particular one in the sense that it was framed with the hope of
parole.
But specifically the hope of just getting back to Deborah. Not even, forget about the parole thing, forget everything else. Mm-hmm. I just like that. I like the letter writing. Mm-hmm. It would have been...
Postcards, very vintage.
Yeah, because obviously she's traveling now.
Yeah.
Which is beautiful. I love that idea that she took his... Mm-hmm. She wanted to do this, and because of her interactions with him, she has grown. Again, somewhat strengthens my... Or supports my case for there has to be something in that performance. Mm-hmm. So that's why I said it was my favorite. A few things before we wrap up. Just wanted to mention, with all these... Georgia is a really popular spot right now for filming because there's a lot of tax breaks and this sort mm-hmm. of thing, right? So say, for example, a lot of the Marvel movies are shot there. And Edgar Wright, I've heard an interview with him where he said he wanted to... Originally, the movie was conceived in L.A. because it's... a city that he spent a lot of time in America in. Mm-hmm. I like that he didn't try and make Atlanta L.A. He just moved the movie to Atlanta and celebrated, mm-hmm. you know, the city of Atlanta in the sense of, like, you know, when you get an aerial shot, mm-hmm. when you get, obviously, you know, a pizza place in the film or mm-hmm. whatever, he's driving on a road. They're not changing street signs. They're not doing it's mm-hmm. Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah.
That's where you are.
Yeah.
And I like that. I really do. Mm-hmm. Because not enough movies do that. And it's like we keep, for example, making jokes about various films like Toronto dressed up to be something else. Or BC dressed up to be Washington or Oregon or something like that. And
they do it so much that when you're watching a movie now, like I was watching this, I'm like, what city is that? Where are they supposed to be? Like, that's the first, you know, that's how my brain works. I'm like, where did they shoot this and what is it supposed to be? And then as you watch, you're like, wait.
Oh, it's Atlanta and they shot in Atlanta?
Yeah,
amazing.
It's like, oh, that's kind of cool.
And you already alluded to the dream ending kind of
the
sequence.
Rainbow.
Yeah, I really like, I didn't see the rainbow, but.
Yeah, there was... Oh, you didn't see it?
No, I didn't catch it.
It was really the top. It was
Because they were black and white sequences, right? And
when
then
it
opened.
To color,
yeah, when it switched to color.
There was this massive rainbow in the background.
Admittedly, I was drooling over the car.
Yeah, the car was awesome. Both times. Three times? Two, three times? Mm-hmm. Well, that gives you an idea of, in his dream world, you know, he sees himself in these cars. That's where he sees himself.
He sees himself in it's his dream car, his dream girl, who's constantly having an orgasm.
Apparently.
And
yeah, right? Sounds something. I don't know.
Yeah. And
you don't even really see him kiss for, like, most of the movie, like, one time.
Kisses her after he shoots John Hamm. I love it.
Yeah.
And that's what, like, seals the deal for her. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I just shot a guy, and can I, you know, I put my tongue down your throat forcefully.
It's like, whoa. Right.
Well, I love you.
Yeah, exactly. And then when he's going to get arrested.
Yeah, that's hot. I think that's about it. Any final thoughts from you?
I really liked
Paola?
It. I liked it. I wasn't expecting it to be the way it was.
Yeah.
I like that kind of dreamy vintage feel in a modern setting thing. Maybe it's weird. Maybe it's just because I think that maybe I see the world that way. Dream vintage feel. You know what I mean? Like, so I think in that sense, I can see how I think they did a great job showing you the world through his eyes.
Yeah. Anything else we need to say on this movie? Would you recommend it? Go out and see it? Or, yeah. Of course. Absolutely. If people are listening, they
I'd
should
love
have seen
to watch it.
It
again.
Yeah. Are you going to watch it again?
Probably.
Yeah.
I watch everything a million times anyway. If I like it,
yeah,
I'd watch it again.
Sweet. I'll watch it with you.
Cool.
Perfect.
You won't have to lube anything up and insert it anywhere or put on any freaky...
Special
you
goggles
won't, no.
Or...
Goggles, no.
Yeah.
Strap
earpieces.
Yourself down to anything.
Yeah.
In the comfort of the living room.
Yeah. There's no suction devices.
No.
All right, so you can reach out to us this week on social media at Mermel Podcast on Twitter, at MRML Podcast. How can people find you on social media? Or just Mermel Podcast?
Yeah, best way to find me on
through Mermel.
Yep.
You can find me on both Twitter and Instagram at NotBrandonFleet. Or you can go to our website, which is moviesfrommylife.com, and email the show at show@moviesfrommylife.com. Also, we'd love it very much if you could review and rate the show wherever you're listening to the podcast now. And make sure you subscribe if you aren't already. We're available on pretty much everywhere that you can listen to podcasts. So iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Pocket Cast, Google Play Music. We're on everything. If we're not where you want to listen to our podcast, let us know and we'll try and get there for you. And I think that's about it. So thanks for hanging out with us. It is milk.
You didn't refrigerate them?
Yeah, I left them on the counter the whole week. No, I took them out of the fridge 10 minutes ago. And not even.
Well, I didn't see you take them out, so I had to add. That's why I'm tired. It's like, that's why I said it. Like,
I love how, yeah, I love how little.
Refrigerate them?
Little faith you have in me. It's inspiring. It's inspiring.